From your world news headquarters on the World Wide Web, it's time for your daily dose of sanity. This is the Maria Heller Show. Maria Heller is a published author, founder of the Universal Wheel, a lifestyle and philosophy based on our interconnectedness to all living things, a Reiki master, and delivers the news with spiritual views. How many intuitive news decoders, animal rights activists, and vegetarian broadcasters are there? Just one. Maria. Maria has provided independent news for a smart audience for over 13 years now on the Maria Heller Show, available at maria.net.
M-E-R-I-A.net.
And now, here is your host, the mouth that roars, Maria Heller.
Good morning, world. Maria here, alive and kicking. How's everybody doing out there? Welcome to the latest episode of Tragedy and Hope with my co-host Richard Grove. If you're not familiar with them, get over to tragedyandhope.com, check out his work. A lot of you actually just discovering Richard, which is an amazing thing to me. And I only know that because of your Facebook post. So I'm glad you found him, and Rich is one of my monthly co-hosts on the show. And again, his body of work is excellent, and I highly recommend it. Good morning, Richard.
Good morning, Maria, and thank you for finding me 6 months ago, or 6 years ago.
Wow, six years ago.
A long time.
All right, time flies when you're having fun. What amazes me is when I see people first discovering your Project Constellation and saying, where's this guy been? And I always refer them to that lecture I gave in Chicago where I introduced you at the time that your information was burning up my servers for, I don't know, at least 3 weeks straight.
Well, I also recall that the only reason that people took a break to clap during your monologue there was because you had already done such a good job of circulating Project Constellation. And, you know, from my perspective, that was a stressful week. You know, that was the end of a stressful week for me because when you said that you were going to publish Project Constellation to the world, I was like, oh, I didn't write it for everybody. I was just trying to reach out to some media hosts so that they could bring up these valid points. And I was a little uncomfortable about being center stage and, you know, being out there on the internet because I had never really published anything. But given the response from your audience and everyone that your audience passed that to in those weeks afterwards, that's what encouraged me to start our website and to eventually, a couple months later, start a podcast. And 6 years later, I still find that to be the most important thing I can do with my time is to continue to learn for myself, learn how to think for myself, and communicate that to an audience who's trying to do the same thing.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hey, I'm glad I was the driving force.
Me too.
Well, and I remember that was a holiday weekend, and I had guests for the weekend. And yet, when I started listening to what you had sent me, I was like, wow, you guys better go find something else to do because I've got to listen to this whole thing, transcribe it, and get it back up on the air. And, I mean, it was an amazing thing. That thing went around like hotcakes. And then, of course,
it's still making its rounds now. And, you know, people who are recently hearing it, I mean, it's on our webpage, tragedyandhope.com, under Tragedy and Hope Podcast. So you can click in there, hear the original Maria broadcast from 6 years ago, and then realize most of the things that I was observing then that might have sounded a bit conspiratorial to most folks. Today, if you cross-reference with some Google searches, you'll see that almost everything I said in there has continued to flesh out. So when I was referring to Google as an NSA project with CIA funding and all these other intelligence groups and that, you know, these things were there to collect information on us, people were like, no, Google says, you know, it's not about evil. It's do no evil, you know. I'm like, well, I'm just telling you from what the research says. And today, it's just a fact.
Absolutely.
It goes on, yeah.
Right. It's common knowledge. It just is. And people have accepted it, and they just move on. We're in a move-on society. One thing that I'd like to move on from is this election already. I'm like, please, God, let the next 2 months pass quickly because I really don't know how much more my stomach can take of all these phonies and criminals parading themselves around. And, you know, to me, I'm still going to stick with I think it was Jack Blood that made the prediction that, you know, putting Romney in place was like just throwing the election to Obama. And looking at him, looking at his elitist wife who was supposed to touch, you know, all the women in America yesterday, they are so out of tune with the average person, let alone the average woman, that it's incredible. You know, look at the platform. They just passed a platform that's ridiculous. Most Republicans don't even like what's become of the Republican Party. So it's, you know, it's like a circus. It's like watching a three-ring circus.
And well, it is. It is totally. I mean, it's scripted. It's staged. It's there. I'm glad it's so obvious now because people smell how ungenuine the whole thing is, the whole campaign, the whole, you know, when you look into, for instance, the Electoral College, you'll see that since 1964, there's only 538 people in this country who actually vote for president. So in my case of being in Connecticut, there's eight people here who vote for president, and I don't vote for any of those eight people. So I understand that there's no connection between my vote and who they put in there. So I choose to reallocate my time to activities that do pay off with a direct causal connection. And that's where I can find I get more traction. Because in years past, I did. I tuned into all that stuff trying to, you know, learn from it. But like Carl Rove says, you know, they're out there creating illusions, and you can study those illusions judiciously as you will, but they're always going to be steps ahead of you. So what I really try to do with my time is to figure out the pattern of their events, the plans that are already pre-existing and in artifacts and documents. And then that tells me it's a moot point who's president, because between Agenda 21 and the smart grid, and there's several other, you know, there was just a Royal Society paper put out called People on the Planet. It's all about eugenics and depopulation. So any of those two, any of the candidates offered are all going to serve that same agenda, because that's what they've been working on steadily for the last 100 years, step by step. And they haven't encountered much resistance yet.
No, and they never seem to lose track of their goals either. They are very patient. They will take as long as it takes to crush us all.
Well, yeah, they're methodical because, you know, what I noticed is, for instance, there's a pattern of the Carnegie Institution in, let's say, 1908, where they wanted to take over the diplomatic machinery of this country, and then they wanted to figure out in 1909 how to keep us at war, and then they figured out, you know, in 1910 that they could take over the education system. That is very similar to 1988 when the United Nations, Environment, Adjustment Bureau, that's not the correct acronym, but it is an accurate description. It's called the UNCED, UNCED, and it's for environment and development for global strategies. And they started figuring out in 1988, and then they had another meeting in 1992, and they just had their 20th anniversary meeting in Rio. And what they've decided to do is they've got, 178 countries and 8,000 different cities participating in a global plan to reallocate the strategic resources and the real estate independent of what individuals want, because it's not being done. It's being done to dissolve national boundaries and to bring about internationalism, which is globalism when you take away all the boundaries. That's what the United Nations was created to do back in the late 40s and 50s, funded by the Rockefeller and Standard Oil money. So when you look at the whole, you know, the whole plan, it doesn't make a difference who they put in there, because whoever's in that house is with a group who rents that house for 4 years at a time. It's gangsterism, and it's all about taking away the rights and volition of individuals and to create a collective where individuals have to be sacrificed for the benefit of the state. Mm-hmm. So in reading back in the history, going back into the 1800s, the 1700s, even into the 1600s, since they discovered that the true nature of individuals is to be free, therefore the nature of tyranny and these tyrannical governments is finite, they've tried to artificially string it out, and the way they want to do that is to be able to manage all the human resources and natural resources on the planet as a global entity to prevent us from ever really becoming individually empowered.
Right, right. And even though now they changed it from, you know, they don't refer to it as Agenda 21, now they call it Smart Growth. So they can change the name all they want, but it's still the same thing. And I think the number one thing about it is basically depriving any individual of any property rights. And you know, I was talking with David Icke a couple of weeks ago, and David had sent a picture out of these new apartments that Mayor Bloomberg is putting up. I think something like 120,000 to start with in New York, that are 10 feet by 30 feet in diameter. And they're supposedly going to rent for under $2,000 a month. But what you're looking at is basically Agenda 21. Imagine 10 feet by 30 feet. That's smaller than a travel trailer. And this is how they start amassing people in little boxes in cities where they're going to be trapped. You know, everything that I've been getting the past few, you know, months has been that people need to get out of the big cities while they still can.
Well, even if you get out of the big cities, the whole agenda of the 21st century, Agenda 21, is about taking people from the rural areas and putting them into basically new projects that they're building right now, which are just, you know, stacked boxes of compartments, call them cells, where people are going to be used as batteries in the Matrix. Mm-hmm. I mean, so they're literally trying to create those ideas that we saw as so entertaining and metaphorical. You know, I mean, that's what's going on. I mean, it happens, let's say, I think it was 1939 when they decided to, take the eugenics agenda and rebrand it. And they rebranded it as molecular biology. So all that work that's been done with DNA and Monsanto and all these different gene splicing projects with animals, they're doing all that just to figure out how to manage human resources and how to separate we, the cattle, that's how they see us, from the ranchers. And the larger the information gap, that's the larger the information power gap, that's the wealth gap. It's all the same thing. It's the inequality that happens when tyranny prevails and intellectual self-defense is absent in the population.
Exactly. Well, then you also have that eminent domain that's already being used to kick people off their property. And, you know, luckily a lot of Americans are aware of Agenda 21 and they fight it, but there's still a whole bunch of cities that are already implementing smart growth, as they want to
call
it.
Yeah, they have no idea. So my first comment would be, have you ever interviewed Rosa Quarry?
No.
She was an eminent domain real estate expert, witness in trials and these sort of things for eminent domain. And then she started coming across land being seized under what's Agenda 21. And now she's an Agenda 21 specialist and goes around educating people as far as, here's the history of it. Here's what it means in your community. And if you think it's not in your community, guess what? Here's how you check out and you find out that it is in your community. Your community is already going along with this, and you're already voluntarily buying into this in a variety of ways. So let me start with the smart grid and the smart devices and the smart meter and the RFIDs and all these biometric ways of capturing your activity. So the idea of warrants and, getting a warrant to search your place, that's obsolete. They no longer need a warrant because you're already providing them voluntarily through your Blu-ray player and your internet access and your every new device that they're making is being set up to feed information into the smart grid. And the smart grid is part of the cybernetics, which is the application of technology to manage human resources, and the technocracy, which is the rule by technicians, not by anyone who's elected. And so the fact is we have a non-elected ruling class that was proven in the 1800s by Vilfredo Pareto and Gaetano Mosca in their work. So this is a well-accepted theory among the elites and the academics that the elite ruling class does exist, but they only exist for reasons of irrationality. They can only exist in the presence of individuals who lack the intellectual self-defense, which is why everything we do at Tragedy and Hope is built around giving the individual a chance to learn how to think for yourself and to install these different tactics of intellectual self-defense to protect yourself from what can't be better described than intraspecific kleptoparasites, people of the same species who are plundering from those who produce.
Right. Well, if you look at, I think about Italy when you talked about these non-elected technocrats. And, Italy right now is basically run by money people. It's just you look at it and you see what's going on in the world. All you have to do is look at both of our candidates for president. They're both supported by Goldman Sachs, who we bailed out, or as Jesse Ventura calls them in his latest book, which is pretty damn excellent, Government Sachs.
All right, so let me refer to some history, because as a forensic historian, this is where I draw most of my information from. So let's go back to the election of 1900. of which I recall Teddy Roosevelt, I believe, won that election. Now, there were three candidates running, so it was like having three parties. So there's, let's say there's like a Democrat, a Republican, for lack of a better term, because they had different parties back then. I think it was Bull Moose Party. But and an alternative candidate like Ron Paul. So you get these three people running for president, and everyone thinks that they had an honest voting system, and they were voting paper ballots, and honest people from their community were counting them. Pretty much couldn't have a better situation, except this. When you read the biographies and autobiographies of, for instance, the Warburg family, you find out that there were three brothers Warburg at that time, Paul, Max, and Sigmund, and each one of them had funded a different American president candidate, so no matter who won, the Warburg family, and thus the, you know, they were handled by the Rothschild family because they're underlings in that empire, mm-hmm. had owned the candidate. So I can only predict that it had gotten more improved over the 20th century because nobody came in and stopped it and recognized it and called a spade and said, wait a minute, the wheel that you're steering is not connected to the wheels on the ground. It's like an amusement park ride. You can turn that wheel all you want, but there's a track being defined underneath the car you're riding in.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, you know, the Warburgs were actually written about and spoofed about in the Little Orphan Annie comics. That's who Daddy Warbucks represents.
Daddy Warbucks, right. Well, I also just got another book a couple weeks ago. It's called A Casual View of America, The Home Letters of Solomon de Rothschild, 1859 and 1861. So he is a young, up-and-coming, second or third generation of the Rothschild banking family. So he's got many brothers and cousins who are running banks in various countries, and he gets sent across the ocean to America in his early years. And he spends 2 years here acting as a spy for the banking empire, letting them know basically where the weak spots of North and South were and how they could fund both sides. And as soon as he leaves, kicks off the Civil War. Now, the Rothschilds had, developed and owned the financing for most of the railroad empires in the 19th century. So the Harriman Empire of railroads was really being funded by J.P. Morgan, who was being, funded by the central bankers, including the Rothschilds. So they had funded the Manifest Destiny campaign, and they had funded various government projects, but they were really seeking to get a central stranglehold over the American government once and for all. And that is, part and parcel with the origins and the real reason behind the Civil War, because when you look after Reconstruction, things are very much different than the way the Founding Fathers had set them up, and that's the result of a slow evolution that gets catalyzed, and the Civil War is used to, kind of veil that.
Mm-hmm. Right. And let's not forget, when they rolled out the Federal Reserve shortly after that 1900 election.
Well, let's look at the people involved in rolling out the Federal Reserve. It's the same, it's the same central bankers and their underlings, right? So what you have is they create the Federal Reserve in 1913, but what most people don't know is the same people who created the Federal Reserve, name by name, go and create another company in 1919 called the American International Corporation. It's the AIC, the American International Corporation, that funds the Bolsheviks, the Nazis, and FDR. And this is what Anthony Sutton finds in his amazing trilogy, on those topics.
Mm-hmm. Right. But, I remember years ago reading John Phelps' book, The Vatican Assassins, and I got to tell you, his story on the Titanic and the connection to that and the Federal Reserve was a hair raiser for me. And
that's actually the interview that I had gone looking for. I was following Phelps' work. I would listen to all his interviews on these different stations. I came across his interview with you, and that's what led me to send Project Constellation to you. But let me rewind a little bit. Phelps' stories. He's got a very interesting rap, okay, and it's some of it's rhetoric, and a lot of it checks out. So the fact that checks out about the Titanic is that the White Star Line was owned by J.P. Morgan, which was funded by the central bankers under the Rothschild Empire, and there was three ships, the Titanic, the Olympic, and the Britannic. So there was three ships of the same size and variety, so one can be switched to the other, et cetera. Not saying that happened. I'm just saying when you take into account all the relevant evidence, including the 1898 book, The Wreck of the Titan, by a guy named Morgan, and 14 years before the Titanic sinks, a book was written describing the world's largest ship. And if you read the description, if you read the book, you would think this was written about the Titanic after the sinking. I have a first edition copy that was printed in 1898, And the book is obviously a script for something that later was acted upon. So the book existed before the Titanic sank, and yet describes it, and it hits an iceberg, it sinks. You know, it's I hate to be a spoiler in this affair, but there are things out there that are being scripted that are beyond anyone's belief. You know, that's what Hoover's quote about the conspiracy was. You know, there exists a conspiracy so monstrous that one cannot believe it exists, right? Because you have to take in so much information to be able to see it, and most people don't have enough time to connect the dots.
Exactly.
That's what I was trying to do in Project Constellation, to connect the dots so you can see the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, it's still a very interesting big picture that we all continue to look into.
Right. Well, what was very convenient about the Titanic was the few senators, et cetera, that were against the Federal Reserve had booked that Virgin trip. And the owner or builder of the Titanic was supposed to be on it. That's how we drew a lot of these millionaires on it.
That was J.P. Morgan.
Right.
He was off the boat. Father Brown was on the boat to photograph those people. That's a legitimate story. You know, it's a legitimate aspect of the story that Phelps tells. And people like John Jacob Astor, who was funding Tesla, end up dead. And then Tesla's work ends up in the hands of J.P. Morgan. And, on that topic,
right,
they were actually trying to take Wardenclyffe and make a museum out of it. And they just raised over $1 million in the past week. And the guy who donated the $33,000 to put him over the top is making a film on Tesla. And we've all been corresponding together. So this is a very interesting synchronicity, because I think some people are about to discover things about Tesla that they have never before realized. And one of the things that I discovered was that when the government sees Tesla's research, the person who's in charge of inspecting all this evidence turns out to be Donald Trump's uncle.
Hmm.
So when you look it up, it's even in a Wikipedia page. If you search that Wikipedia page on Tesla under his death, you'll see that Donald Trump's uncle is the guy for the government who takes in all these top secret inventions and basically inventories them. So, you know, from uncle to, you know, Trump, you know, today, it's not a hidden line of influence. If you look at all these relevant facts, how do these people achieve and maintain their power? And then there might even be a play on power.
Right, exactly. So, you know, I guess they got a good trifecta on the Titanic. You know, you think about 1984, you think about Brave New World. You know, these were all scripts for what's happening today. Huxley and Orwell were insiders. They didn't make this stuff up. And it's kind of, you can go all the way to the script of that woman from the BBC after 9/11 talking about the Building 7 having fallen down while it's still standing behind her. And when I try to tell people, you know, everything you hear and read on TV or news is scripted, you know, they have a hard time believing that. But, I mean, they're all saying the exact same things.
Well, those are good observations, because the whole BBC thing, I checked into that as well. And they do report it before it happens. And they report it before it happens, and then it happens. And
right.
Why does it happen during the daylight hours? If they're just going to pull the building, why not wait 2 hours until it's dark? So there's a whole series of questions there that will never get answered if you just believe the official story.
Right.
And so when, you know, you're just, that's taking a shortcut to thinking that does not arrive at knowledge. And that's a dangerous place to be. You should always be in the process of attaining knowledge, and that's by asking substantial questions and finding valid answers.
Mm-hmm.
Until we do that as a group and stop succumbing to people saying, well, it's a conspiracy theory. Well, guess what? You're intellectually bankrupt on that topic. What have you looked at? How much time have you spent looking at the primary sources? Because that is how one learns what is available as far as evidence. And then you've got to remove the contradictions, and only then do you have knowledge. And if we could all just be taught that in public school, it would be great, but we're purposely not taught that to make us servants of the state.
Exactly, which is pretty much what most people are. I don't know if you followed the story.
They don't have to be.
They don't have to be, but you know what, Richard? People are lazy. And they don't want to know, because God forbid they actually have to do something. You know, they somehow think the system's just going to automatically or magically fix itself.
Those are signs of extended adolescence. And I just want people to know that there is an adult world. There is a reality. It is objective. We can communicate and solve problems, but not until more people jump into reality and just start dealing with what is, what exists, and how can we, you know, take it in our light direction.
Absolutely. You know, I don't know if you saw the story, because I know you're staying pretty busy with films and things, but an ex-Marine was arrested and put into a mental hospital where they were about to force drug him for what he was posting on Facebook. Now, I went over to his Facebook and looked through several pages of his wall, and I can honestly tell you, Richard, it was mild compared to what I post on my Facebook. But it's really a
story.
Yeah, I mean, it's if you question 9/11 now, you belong in a mental institution. If you mention anything about false flags, you belong in a mental institution. And although they did this, I'm sure, to create a lot of fear, their own tools worked against them because, I mean, it was the quickest viral campaign I ever saw. That guy was released like in 2 days.
I'm glad that he was released. It saddens me that he was even taken. It saddens me even more to know that there are many other soldiers all across the country who are snatched like that. I think that the fact that his lawyer put out, it was 20,000 people yearly are taken in Virginia and put into mental institutions against their will, just like taken off the streets. And that 20 other vets had been picked up maybe in the past week in that area. So it wasn't just him, it wasn't just his Facebook. He was quoting the lyrics from a song, and I disagree with Facebook, you know, harvesting all that private information, but I also disagree with the individuals who voluntarily serve up their information for those other predatory corporations to harvest and hand out to so-called authorities. And the only reason that government or police or anyone has the authority to do anything is because an individual has the right to self-defense, and then you have the right to outsource that. You know, government is there to protect your rights. So people, when they lose the idea of the cause and effect between their individual living and breathing, and that gives you inalienable rights, regardless of what area of the planet you're born on. You know, the thing that Romney and Obama will spit out is that, well, if you live in America, you have all these rights, but if you live in one of these other parts of the country or the world, you don't have these rights. So these aren't just American rights. The people that put that together weren't just saying, you know, we were the first ones to observe this, but this applies to every living human being. If you are breathing, you have the right to your own private property, to the rights of your own labor, to the rights of self-defense.
Right. Well, I remember. I think it was.
Then other people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Get that. Other people will abuse their authority.
Right. Well, didn't the United Nations come out with a bill of international human rights years ago? Not that anyone bothers to enforce it.
Okay, so I've read that before. I think it's the last section, section 29, if I remember correctly. Either that or it's section 15. Somewhere in there, it basically says everything in here is moot unless, you know, if you disagree with the United Nations, you're a terrorist. And basically it says you have no human rights. And since they can give the rights, they can take them away. So you have to very closely read any of these documents that are proclaimed as universal peace or, you know, global brotherhood or any of these things, because there's always a catch in there where the ruling class is just using it as another proxy to rule over an even larger section of human resources with even more total probability that nobody will escape their system. Right now, there's a lot of holes in their system because they're trying to expand and really lock things down. And I think they're having to speed up their plan because there is a global awakening of consciousness going on, a global awakening of political consciousness, because individuals are realizing that they have rights and responsibilities in their local communities and that they should be ruled and governed by people who are accountable locally. Mm-hmm. And when it gets unlocal, like Agenda 21 or United Nations, that is the, you know, that's the red flag of tyranny right there. And we better recognize what that is, because this country wants, for a few years, was free because it had an educated population, not an educated electorate, because that buys into the fallacy that you're really electing who's ruling you. Mm-hmm. You should rule yourself. You should be your own best decision maker, and you should be surrounded by other people who can do likewise. And that's how you resist tyranny effectively. And until we get our, you know, get everything back together mentally as individuals, we can't do much as groups except be subverted by pseudo leaders and these other crackpots who go out there and these psychopaths who take over by force. Mm-hmm. And that's why we had put together the ultimate history lesson last summer, because once discovering that there was this whole other line of thought that exists that is the line of thought of a free thinking human being that's an individual, not part of a collective, we had to memorialize that and try to get that into everyone's hands, because it's the real chance you have to learn your way out of the terrarium that they've built around us to control all the human resources.
All right. Well, I can tell you this. A lot of my listeners bought The Ultimate History Lesson by John Taylor Gatto, and they all wrote me about how excellent it was, how they were showing it to their school-age children and wishing they could show that inside schools. And for people that don't know what I'm talking about, I have a banner here, and my banner's at the bottom of the page, where it's, thanks to Richard, a very special offer for my listenership. But I also, we did an interview on it. I don't know, Rich, when was it? A couple of months ago? So just look in the archives for Tragedy and Hope and get an understanding of what we talked about on that show.
Well, the long story short is, it's a 5-hour interview that should be in everyone's family archives and should be viewed not only by individuals, but watch it with your friends, family, and colleagues, because everyone around us, everyone we're surrounded by is afflicted by the extended adolescence that is instilled through public schooling and mass media. And there's a way out of it, but it just takes watching a little bit of media.
Right. Rich, we're going to go to a short break, but when we get back, I'd like you to give an update on what's happening with John Taylor Gatto. I know he's, you know, on in years and he's not doing too well physically. So I'm going to ask my listeners to stay with us and we will be right back.
From a distance, the world looks blue and green, and the snow-capped mountains.
At this point in Earth's history, it's safe to say that we all know it's beyond time to reinvent the wheel. No system on Earth is working anymore, and we see it all collapsing like a deck of cards. You may agree that it's hard to keep your balance and sanity in a world gone mad. You may wonder how I do. Well, it's all in my book, Reinventing the Wheel, The 13 Stones of the Universal Wheel, the tool for global unity. Learn about how I keep happy, healthy, balanced, and focused on a better future for all living things within the pages of a book I was told would become a Bible of future generations. There's never been a time it's been needed more. Reconnect to the soul that lives inside your body. Reconnect to the natural world and be happy again. Become attuned to everything around you, both seen and unseen. The book is available right here on site. Hard copy if you live in the U.S. and ebook format if you live outside the U.S. Something so simple as real spirituality should be. Something that costs you nothing but letting go of old programming and beliefs based on lies. Become a free, fully participating human doing. Order your copy today, right here at maria.net. You'll be glad you did. Now, back to the show. Welcome back to the show that does give you real hope and the best minds on the planet, Tragedy and Hope, with my co-host, Richard Grove. Rich, we were talking about John Taylor Gatto's excellent work before the break, and I understand he's not doing too well. What are you guys up to? What's happening with that?
We filmed The Ultimate History Lesson last summer, so July of 2011 was July 2nd through 3rd. John had a stroke on July 27th, 2011. So about 3 weeks after we filmed, he had a stroke. And since then, he has spent 9 months or 10 months in various hospitals and rehab centers. And it's during that time when he lost about half of his body weight and the rehab center lost his dentures. So he's been home convalescing. He's got a hospital bed in his living room. And his wife, Janet, who's about 71, John's 76, Janet's in a walker. And so it's a struggle for her to do everything that she needs to do to help John. And they don't have, a regular nurse or anyone that's able. So I guess they've worn out their health insurance, and I guess they have Medicare and whatnot, but it runs through an HMO. And so Lisa and I have been doing our best to work through all these different log jams, as it were, And we went down there probably about a month ago. That was our first visit. And we witnessed a situation that was, it was a state of decay, and they both need a lot of help. So we came up with a 7-point plan, and we presented it to the Tragedy and Hope community, and we were able to get the plan rolling. And the step one was to get him nutrified and get him all the types of things that his body needs to start healing and for his muscles to stop wasting away. He has paralysis on the left side of his body. He'll need physical therapy. He's not getting any at this point, but we're in a state of trying to give his body what it needs first, and then there are various other steps, including physical therapy. We've already been working with him, so I've been there a total about 6 hours discussing his plans for his next book, his notes. I've taken him some books. He's read some of those books. By the next visit, we discussed those books. So he's still very sharp mentally. He still has the mindset that he's not letting the debilitation of his left side of his body affect him adversely. He's still able to write and take notes and read books and highlight and do all these things that he needs to do for his work to be productive. And so our goal is to get him back at least to a seated position where he can type comfortably at the computer in the next 6 months, to get his body mass back to the point where his legs can support his body, where he at least has a fighting chance not to fall when he's been moved from, for instance, the hospital bed to the wheelchair. And we've started a collection. So there's the John Taylor Gatto Recovery Fund on Tragedy and Hope Community, as well as the ultimatehistorylesson.com/donate. So there's a page there that explains John's situation, and there's a chip-in widget that shows how much we've collected for this month, and then we'll run another one for the next month because he needs continued help for the next several months. And that was our goal, to observe the situation, assess what he needs, and start getting the process moving and removing the logjams.
Well, that's great. It's great that you're doing that. So, again, that's the ultimatehistorylesson.com/donate.
Yeah, and on anything you purchase, since you're listening to the Maria Show, you can enter in the coupon code. What is it, Maria? Is it Maria or Maria Heller?
I don't remember. I think it's just not Maria. Either one, I'm sure.
I think it's just Maria. I probably made it simple. So M-E-R-I-A, and then you'll get the Gatto Recovery Bonus Pack. We'll give you some extra discs, and a significant portion of that goes to John to help him out, and he very much appreciates it. I had no idea if he liked the Ultimate History Lesson or not, because he had had the stroke and he was not able to be communicated with.
Right.
So during the first visit, he looked me in the eye and was telling me how much he loved it, and he loved the artwork and the presentation. The whole package, he said, was just beautiful. And I was
That's
like,
great.
That was the first time I knew he approved of it.
That's great. Well, at least you know. And by the way, I looked it up. The coupon code is Maria Heller.
Oh, there you go.
So there you go. All I had to do was look at my own website, which I don't do too often. Okay, you mentioned a couple of words earlier, and a lot of people may not be aware what they are. I had to look them up myself. Cybernetics and technocracy.
Well, those are both fascinating terms. So I'm going to start by defining cybernetics.
Mm-hmm.
The first place in Western literature that this term turns up is in Plato's Republic. I think it's in Book 6. The Greek word is cybernetes, which means governor or steersman or helmsman, someone who controls a whole ship of state, as it were. Plato also mentions it in his book Alcibiades, and again, it has the connotation of controlling human resources. Now, that term is wished upon, but they didn't really have the technology beyond law, which is the use of words to control human resources, until 1843, and then there's a Polish guy named B.F. Trentowski who coins the phrase cybernetics in his book Cybernetics or The Art of Ruling Nations. In the same year over in France, Marie Ampère comes up with the French word cybernétique, Q-U-E. So these terms are all being used to control or govern human resources artificially from outside through creating a collective, which was the idea in Plato's Republic, to create a caste system.
Mm-hmm.
So in the 1800s, they start to redevelop these ideas. And in the 1900s, we begin to have the technology to actually control individuals. Now, the school system was set up to break the individual's curiosity and sense of self and to outsource their self-esteem to make the individuals into a collective. Now they're coupling that with the ability to use technology and all these different cybernetic tracking systems. So it's a tracking, any type of information collection system that is used to control human resources. So that would be cybernetics.
Uh-huh.
Now let's look at technocracy. Technocracy as a word starts in 1932 at Columbia University. And then in 1934, it's codified into a corporation called Technocracy, Inc. Now, the principles behind technocracy are that redistribution of wealth by an elite ruling class who would then use technology to enforce it. And so it has to do with the restructuring of civilization. So there's also a Bertrand Russell book that talks about this in 1916 called The Principles of Social Reconstruction. And so it's pointing toward the use of technology to rule over people, which is cybernetics, to create a world state. So in 1916, Bertrand Russell is saying in this book over and over, world state, world state, world state. And then if you follow his books up through the 1940s and 50s, again, it's about using scientific management and scientific dictatorship to create a world state. And they need the scientific management, which is technocracy, to create a world state through cybernetics, which is the use of this technology to control all the individuals, which that's the smart grid. That's your smart meter. That's your smartphone. That's your smart TV, all these unsmart devices, which are creating a gulag archipelago where we have, you know, it's worse than the Soviet Union. At least back then, it had to be a human being spying on you. You might find out who it is. Now your own smart meter, your electric meter in your house, you know, that thing that's going to be the internet hub for all the other devices in your house that spy on you and coordinate that thing is going to be informing and billions of people. Like one third of people in America already have a smart meter.
Right.
Right. So there's already a third of people who have already given away their volition without even thinking about it or resisting. So it's up to the other two thirds of us to say, wait a minute, why do I need to replace the electric meter on my house? Is it going to lower my bill? Nope, there's no evidence of that. Is it going to damage my health? Well, there is some evidence that that might happen. Will it spy on me? There's 100% evidence it's going to be used to spy on you.
Right. Well, they've been doing that with a lot of water meters,
like kindergarten.
Right. Right. I mean, they did that, you know, they did that in Phoenix. I know they did that in Phoenix where they replaced everybody's water meter. You had no choice. It was just done. You know, I was in a rental at the time. And the only real difference that I could notice was my water bill went down. So I was like, wow, my water bill went down. I thought for sure they'd find another way to screw you with that. But, yeah.
You get a discount for getting the fluoride.
I guess. Well, then you got to pay all kinds of money to get the fluoride out of the water. So when you look at cybernetics, you look at technocracy, it all falls into perfect alignment with Agenda 21. Because when I looked up technocracy, Rich, when I looked up technocracy, this was the definition, the short definition I got. It said technocracy is a form of government in which experts in technology would be in control of all decision making. Scientists, engineers, and technologists who have knowledge, expertise, or skills would compose the governing body instead of politicians, businessmen, and economists.
It's a new type of ruling class, and it's the type of ruling class that'll geoengineer your environment without your consent, but you'll have to pay for it. That's the definition of being a slave.
Right.
And so they're working on, you know, human slavery. That is their, you know, that's the ruling class's whole game. They like to run global plantations if they could, and that's what they're working toward. So Agenda 21 is the result of a working group called the United Nations who has these different working group plans, one of which is Agenda 21, one of which is the United Nations Disarmament Agenda, you know, one of which could be sterilizing people in third world countries for purposes of eugenics, but they don't call it eugenics anymore. They call it molecular biology.
Right. Well, they also want to take your property away, put you in dense cities, you know, eliminate your right to even drive a car. And all of this is going to be done in the name of sustainability, as if they care about sustainability.
So technocracy, right. So technocracy from Columbia University, which used to be King's College, so you can see where the agenda comes from. It's a central hub for Fabian socialist New World Order strategy. It's Fabian socialist, look at it as a human resource management system. So they are coming up with a plan to manage all the human resources, not nationally, but internationally, globally, is their optimal plan.
Mm-hmm.
So they've been working on this, and they have these working groups that come together and have meetings, and then they deliver results. That's how they're getting things done. And so if they're not able to take these steps without resistance, I mean, you know, if they're able to take these steps without resistance, they can obviously accomplish their goal. They are encountering exponential resistance right now because more and more people know something's wrong. And those of us who are figuring out and have invested the time on explaining what exactly, here's how it all fits together,
mm-hmm.
can now come out to those, you know, those people and meet. And we can share this data, and they can learn, and we can learn from their questions and following up and finding more answers, because we don't know everything, but we know enough to say, the land that's being seized, all these other social economic problems that are being artificially manifested, the geoengineering, all these things fall into their plans. It's a finite planet. There's a finite ruling class, and they're ruled by a corrupt philosophy. So it's not any people that you could remove proverbially from the situation, because they've already cultivated the culture with a philosophic corruption of reality. The fact that it's okay to take from other people, you know, all these irrational ideas,
right.
they make just as equal as the honest, hardworking ethic of self-reliance that was America. And so they're changing the definition of our culture. And when they change the attitudes, beliefs, and behaviors of people through schooling or media, that is the literal definition of brainwashing.
I totally agree.
As soon as we recognize it, we can stop it.
Mm-hmm. And we are, obviously. You know, when I look at and you know, some people think that I'm crazy for being on Facebook. But I've always known my whole life that, you know, the way you use the tool is either for positive or negative. So you can actually turn it on them if you want in a very nice way. But what I see there is a gigantic awakening. And, you know, even when I go out and about my little small town, listening to conversations people are having, or, you know, online at the grocery store, they're complaining about all the right things, and they know about the Federal Reserve. They know about all these conspiracies that are facts that people wanted to pretend were theories back in the day. And it amazes me that people are waking up, and it makes me feel good, because for a very long time, I thought I was just, hate to say it, pissing in the wind doing my show. It was very frustrating for so many years. But, you know, here it is, you know, mere 13 years later, and we've obviously made a huge dent in waking people up.
Well, I think people are making a huge stride in their own wake-up process. It's like the public schooling system puts, you know, your curiosity in a vault, and it locks it up.
Mm-hmm.
But we are the only ones that can unlock that vault. No one else can wake us up for it. Like, we have to take those steps mentally ourselves to ask those questions and to really get our curiosity back. It's still there. It's just pretty well locked up. It's guarded by denial and emotional responses, and it's unlocked by compassionate communication and using logic and reason and explaining step-by-step observations without contradictions that lead to a conclusion that other people can take and say, yes, this is solid. I can do something with this.
Right. Well, you know, I'd like to think, too, on another level, Rich, I'd like to think that it's kind of like the 100 monkey theory. You know, if we are all one and we all share a mass consciousness, I think as one person wakes up, two people wake up, the two people wake up and wake up four more, you know, and on it goes. And I think this is exactly how we change mass consciousness. It starts small, but look at how fast it's moving, which is probably scaring the people in charge, because they didn't count on people waking up and waking up in huge numbers.
Brzezinski's worst fear is a global awakening of consciousness. And so what I'm looking to do is I'm not so much looking to scare him, but I am looking to take the observation. They use this tool called learned helplessness, and it's used in groups to make, you know, others seem helpless, even though they haven't tried for themselves. I want to reverse that tactic, because if we show this learned helpfulness, this self-reliance that really created the fabric of America in the first place, if we demonstrate that for other people by doing it for ourselves, I think they're smart enough to do likewise.
Absolutely.
It's easy. it starts with a couple questions, and then you have to have the integrity to do what you said you were going to do when you said you were going to do it, and just repeat that process. And as long as you're always on a path of integrity, you'll always be happy with where you're at. You know, they get us to leap when we're children toward these goals that you don't know what you're going to have to do to be that goal, but some kids really get that, and they want to be that goal. Mm-hmm. Let's say you want to be president. Well, that means you're going to have to compromise and basically be the tool of somebody else to get that job. But if you've set that goal and you really want to attain it, you're probably willing to compromise your integrity, and that's indicative of everything that's wrong. The stock market, the prices in the stock market have nothing to do with the integrity of the companies doing business. It is very much disconnected and controlled by illicit media and rumor and speculation, and that is what controls our greatest economic resources. That's ludicrous. Who would vote for that when you had all relevant evidence on the table? But if you're brought up to think that that's how you should do it, and then you want to go emulate that and support that system, that is the very definition of the philosophic corruption in our reality.
Absolutely. You know, when you sent me your information yesterday on what you wanted to talk about, it was interesting because I got, you know, synchronicity, as you know, synchronicity better than anybody, Richard. One of my listeners sent me this short little article. And it was off something called explosivereports.com. And I'll read it to you and you can tell me what you think.
That's Jerrion Mason's site. I'm a big fan of that site. He's
okay.
A great writer and takes a lot of the, go ahead.
All right. Then you might be aware of this article, but it's not that long. Chief scientist Mikhail Frakias, involved with Planet Under Pressure, told MSNBC that the answer to population growth is denser cities. If cities can develop in height rather than in width, that would be much more preferable and environmentally not as harmful. And I guess the writer says, people who know anything about history know that the creation of megacities in which the masses may be rounded up and enclosed is identical to the Nazi principle of the ghetto as a means of managing the masses. And every student of history may also know what happens to those masses shortly after. And, of course, I immediately thought of those 10 by 30 feet apartments of Mr. Bloomberg's.
Okay, so there's a variety of thoughts. I'm going to get to this Bertrand Russell quote where he disproves Malthus, which I thought was really interesting since they're all Darwinian eugenicists. But before that, I forgot to mention that one of the guys that came up with this idea of technocracy at Columbia University, his name was Marion King Hubbert, and he later created a theory called peak oil, which has been very useful to the globalists who are seeking to bring about this, you know, global society through the control of energy and resources, artificial scarcity, all these other lies. Speaking of artificial scarcity, this is from page 127 of Principles of Social Reconstruction by Bertrand Russell from 1916. He says, Malthus's statement of the population question had been true enough up to the time when he wrote, it is still true of barbarous and semi-civilized races and of the worst elements among civilized races. But it has become false as regards to the more civilized half of the population of Western Europe and America. Among them, instinct no longer suffices to keep numbers even stationary. So he's basically saying that the civilized world, the Western cultures as he defines them, are experiencing depopulation. Okay, so when they're talking about overpopulation, that is code for genocide against people who are not Anglo-Saxon. Mm-hmm. And there is copious amounts of references on the racists who are the Darwinists, the Huxleys, and Julian Huxley helped to create UNESCO, which is a United Nations group on controlling education for the planet globally. Mm-hmm. So this is not conspiracy theory. This is very much the history, the fabric of our world and our reality. And it is that which you can attain for yourself as far as understanding, because I don't have any special talents other than the curiosity to persistently ask questions and find answers.
Mm-hmm. Well, that is a talent. You're good at it. But everybody can do it, and if they don't want to, they can support what you do and what I do and what so many other people do. Instead of sitting back and saying, oh, this person's a crackpot or this one's this and this one's that, you know, pay attention to the work that we do. But, of course, people should study on their own.
If you find it useful, you got to support people who do what we do. I mean, it's a habit that you can acquire for yourself, but not everyone has the inclination to do it for themselves. So I think it's the responsibility to support those of us who do, because, like John Taylor Gatto, we are spending our lives helping people that we may never meet face-to-face, but we are helping people. The feedback we get tells us that, And that is the reward that we're seeking. We just seek to continue to do it and to be able to proliferate the message that we're purveying, which is a message of individuality, voluntary society, and hope, to more people before it's too late.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, you mentioned something in your notes to me yesterday about the Fellows of the Royal Society. So I did a little research on them too. And the president of the Royal Society said, science impacts on most aspects of modern life, improving our understanding of the world and playing an increasing role as we grapple with problems such as feeding a growing global population and keeping an aging home population healthy. All I saw that as was doublespeak because, I mean, this is a board where you have everybody from cosmologists to geneticists sitting on it. And, you know, the scientists from NASA.
Well, these are all signs that a small group of people thinks they have the right to make decisions on behalf of 7 billion people. And these people that are making the decisions are not elected. And reading from the April 2012 Royal Society People on the Planet paper, it says, this year's Rio Plus 20 conference on sustainable development, the discussion at the UN General Assembly, revisiting the International Conference on Population Development scheduled for 2014 and 2015. So they're talking about Agenda 21, the 20th anniversary in Rio that they just had. Sustainable development is code for taking away the rights of individuals and making a collective globalist society. And any talk of population and development really means genocide because they are aiming it at countries that they see as third world, and they don't want to take the resources away from Anglo-Saxons, for instance, because those are the people that are writing this paper, and give them to other people. They would rather starve those people out, lessen the population, and have more for themselves. That is indicative of intraspecific kleptoparasites. We just have to put a name on what they are.
Right. Well, you know, reminds me of a book I read and interviewed the author on. God, it's got to be 12 years ago, called The World is a Ghetto. And it's like a history book because he talks about the fact that there's always been a war on the dark races on this planet since time began. So obviously that hasn't changed. Anyway.
There's also the irrationality of that war because, you know, Darwin writes about this, but then he also writes about mating with people of those races. So, or attempting to mate.
Well, I don't know. I still like George Carlin's view on racism the best. His view was if everybody had sex with everybody else, we'd all blend into one particular color and racism would be gone. So I think Carlin had the right answer. Of course, he didn't say it that cleanly, should I add. Anyway, Rich, I do want to thank you for joining me today because, as usual, this has been a ton of information, and I'm sure my listeners are going to totally appreciate it. But remember, people, you guys can do your own work, too. I mean, I know we throw a lot of stuff out at you, but just because we do the research doesn't mean you can't follow up on it. And if you don't have time, that's great. You're listening to the show. But as Rich said, these are people that need to be supported. You know, I had somebody call me this week, as a matter of fact, Richard, mention you and Jack Blood by name to me and couldn't understand why you guys are not, you know, being taken care of and why, you know, why we have money problems. And, you know, I did have to tell them if it wasn't for my own business on the side, I'd be in the same position where I couldn't do what I do. And I said, you know, people have got to learn to start supporting people that are actually changing the world instead of the liars that I see on TV only when I'm at the gym because the TV's on and it's enough to make me want to hurl. But people have to say, you know, people are paying anywhere from 50 to 100 bucks or more a month for cable TV or their lying media. So there's no excuse for them not to support people that are doing the right thing. That's my speech, and there's my sermon.
Well, I appreciate the people who do, and I support the others who do likewise. So I was just a guest on Jack's show a couple weeks ago. We had a great time, and I look forward to being a guest. You know, he's got it commercial free now over on the No Agenda stream.
Good, I'm happy for him.
An interesting format because for the first time I could have a conversation with Jack for an hour without being broken up by commercials, and I was like, this is great. I'm glad to see at least he's evolving in the right direction like that.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my show's always been that way, and you would think people would truly appreciate that because I don't even like being a guest on someone's show that has commercials because it's really difficult to keep your train of thought, let alone the audience's
attention.
Absolutely.
Well, and in the 30-second explanation, that's why I sent Project Constellation to you, because I actually got to hear Eric John Phelps, which just sounded like a conversation between two real people, and it wasn't all broken up by commercials, and that's what really gave me the hope and inspired me to send Project Constellation to you on Memorial Day 2006, and ever since then, things haven't been the same.
Well, I hope that's a good thing, and that's how soulmates connect. Well, Rich, thanks so much for joining me today.
I say that with thanks.
I know you do. I know you do. And I'll talk to you again soon.
Right on. Thank you, everyone, for listening.
You're welcome. Okay, folks, there you have it. Richard Grove, Tragedy and Hope. Get over, check out his work. Support the people that are working tirelessly and none of us getting rich to educate.
Thank you for listening and supporting the Maria Show. Tell others what you learned today. Knowledge becomes wisdom only when it's shared. Encourage others to subscribe today. www.maria.net. Often imitated, never duplicated. A world of information all in one place. www.maria.net. Always ahead of the curve. Always on your side. Get active or get radioactive. Subscribe today.